discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Today we're going to talk about some not-so-easy subjects. We're going to talk about the disturbing trends in the healthcare of women, children, and the family.
When I sat down and started working on this textbook on Napro technology, I had envisioned in my mind that I would outline the different trends that have occurred relative to the healthcare of women, children, and families. Mm-hmm. And once I began doing the research into it and investigating it further, I had to retitle the chapter to Disturbing Trends, and I'm not even sure that's strong enough. What's happened in the last 45 years is a national tragedy. And somewhere along the line, we're going to have to come to grips with this as a culture. And I'm not so sure we're going to be able to do it soon. We have to lay the groundwork for people to start looking at it seriously. There's a lot of things. You can sort of summarize it by saying there's been a disintegration of the family over this period of time, but there's been a lot of particulars that we can outline.
You've come to this understanding because of your work as an OBGYN, haven't you?
Yeah, you see everybody, I mean, in every group of people and so forth. First of all, as a physician and in obstetrics and gynecology, we deal with the beginnings of life, and you see it at all different elements of that. And so it strikes home. I mean, you see the divorce rate increasing, and you see the abortion rate increasing, and you see how they have both paralleled the increase in the use of oral contraceptives and intrauterine devices and sterilization. So you got to think to yourself that there's some relationship here, that we're doing something to relationships that is really devastating. And I don't think that's too strong a word to be using, actually. It's very destructive, and it's very subtle. And I think maybe from that point of view, it's very seductive and not easily identifiable by many, many people, actually. Even if you talk about it and address it and show them, you know, they'll have some argument that it's really not related to the contraception issue. Of course, issues like this are often related to multiple causes, not just one cause. But contraception lures up there very, very high. It's been devastating to our society, actually.
We hear on the news for years that just the unbelievable statistics of divorce and that effect on women. More women are living in poverty now because they are single mothers as a result of divorce. Women have suffered greatly, and because of that, so has their children.
Well, not only has divorce created single mothers, but the number of unwed mothers, out-of-wedlock mothers, has increased by sevenfold in the last 45 years. One out of every three babies in the United States right now is born to a woman who's not married. Mm. And that has just devastating consequences to the children that are being raised in that family. The father in the family has taken a lot of hits because of, I suppose the feminist movement has had a lot to do with it. And then men aren't all that great about promoting their own worth when it comes to this. But, you know, men are really important in raising children. And sometimes I don't think we've paid enough attention even to thinking about it. It's so obvious what women do. And it's not as obvious what men do, but what men do is really important, and it brings a balance and a very constructive sort of role to play within the overall relationship. Now, it could be also very devastating, but so can that be if it's a mother who's got problems. There are certainly a lot of men who've exhibited problems, but then you wonder if some of that's not because of all the devastating breakdown in the relationships that have occurred, too. There's a real need for more study on this. But at the same time, we can't turn our back on it. We can't just live in some nirvana which says this doesn't exist. Because it does exist, it's real, and it's devastating to a large number of people.
It's going back to Humanae Vitae and the writings of Pope Paul VI, who warned us, I think it was in number 17 of Humanae Vitae, where he talks about contraception, what it can actually do to men.
Pope Paul VI was incredible at being able to have an insight into how devastating contraception can be to relationships. One of the things that he was criticized for, and it wouldn't be just him, it would be anybody in his position, mm-hmm. is that he was a celibate male, and what does he know about all this? Actually, he knows a lot about it for a lot of different reasons, probably not the least of which is that he's been in the confessional for 40 or 50 years of his life, and he hears things there that, you know, quite honestly, the people who make policy and this sort of thing haven't the foggiest idea what he's hearing. But what he hears, or any priest hears in the confessional, is if their eyes are willing to be opened, they can be opened big and wide to what's happening and why it's happening. And they get an insight that probably is quite unique to the Catholic Church. And it's sort of like this. If you're a celibate priest, you don't have anything to say about it. I must tell you that I think a lot of priests began believing that. And that's one reason they've been so quiet as well. It's a sort of a psychological, almost maybe spiritual as well, way of quieting that voice, without sort of firing a shot, so to speak. And they've been pretty quiet, and it's been devastating because of the quiet. They need to regain their proper position that they have. I mean, they're sexual beings just like anybody else is. And of course, if we think of our sexuality as only genital in focus, then we're going to miss out on all of this, but our sexuality is so much more than that. And I think that's what Humanae Vitae calls us to, is a much deeper understanding of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, and to try to bring that into your relationships. And love, of course, is expansive. It brings two people very close at a level of intimacy that actually goes way beyond just the physical. And there's a strength, what I like to call marital bonding, which is sort of a takeoff on the maternal-infant bonding of maybe 30 years ago. But I think we see this in users of a natural method of family planning, for example, that because they're working together on a common goal or a common outcome of their relationship, the relationship is built stronger as a result of that, and there's a bonding in the relationship that occurs. And I just have to think that Pope Paul VI, maybe not with those words necessarily, but he had some thought about that insight.
Something must have happened because, as you point out, approximately 88% of the children lived with both parents in the 1960s. And that has dropped significantly to 69% in the year 2000.
Yeah, it's
something
been,
happened.
Well, it's pretty dramatic. And the one thing that's happened is the influx of contraception. There hasn't been too much study of all of this, first of all, I might point out, but there was a really good study done in the mid-1980s by Dr. Robert Michael from the University of Chicago. And he looked at things such as the divorce laws, income variables, age variables, whether the military obligations, different facets to what might lead to an increase in a divorce rate. And when he laid it all out, many of these things were not related at all. But the one thing that was related to at least 50% of the divorces, the installation or institution of technological forms of contraception. In that case, it was birth control pills, sterilization, and the intrauterine device mostly. There aren't a lot of studies on this, but this was a pretty rigorous study. And if you just draw the graph relative to the use of oral contraceptives, for example, mm-hmm. and the rising divorce rate, they parallel each other dramatically. If you throw abortion in there, it parallels it dramatically. If you throw the decrease in children living with both parents, like you asked, it's changed dramatically at the same point in history. Almost everything changed in the early 1960s, and it continued on a huge sort of explosion almost until the early 1990s, and it's begun to stabilize now, but it stabilized at a very high rate. So sometimes you hear the news media saying, oh, they'll use abortion or they'll use maybe even divorce. So divorce rates are down the last 3 years. Yeah, they're down over a few year period of time, but go back 50 years and they're not anywhere near what they could be.
Right.
Now, I run the risk a little bit when I say that of people saying, well, you just want to go back 50 years. And that's not really what I'm saying at all. But it does tell you that there was a time in our culture when divorce was unacceptable. And people made their marriages work.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, in many cases, for better or for worse. But I think today, actually, we have the potential to be for better, more so than ever before. And now we just, it's like any little thing almost happens and we're out of there, you know?
That's right.
It's really tragic. Well, we just see it a lot in our own practice when we see patients and what appears at least to be the role of contraception in their past.
It's that whole mechanism of fidelity, the whole idea that you are to remain faithful. I will remain faithful to you, you remain faithful to me. Once contraception was placed, it damaged the ability of fidelity to last.
Well, it definitely did. And of course, one of the things that Paul VI specifically predicted was that faithfulness among spouses would change dramatically. And of course, that did happen.
Yeah, he was
very
absolutely
much so.
Right.
Absolutely 100% correct. You know, and as a result of that, I mean, if you're unfaithful in your marriage, you know, there's not much marriage left. And the next thing, they're in the divorce courts and you have all of this trickle-down effects, which involve the rising abortion rate, the increased number of children born out of wedlock. And then if you start looking at the children who are born into those families, you find that suicide is the second or third leading cause of teenage deaths, especially amongst teenage young men. You find alcohol and drug abuse being increasing. You find juvenile detention programs on the increase. You find, interestingly enough, you find childbirth and neglect having increased during this period of time. Now, just keep in mind for a moment that we've been sold by a pretty good PR relation firm, whoever that is, that Planned Parenthood says that every child, a wanted child, is going to solve everything we've ever done. Well, we have been living in an every child, a wanted child environment now for 45 or 46 years, and all it has brought is a whole litany of victims. Things like child abuse and neglect are one of those things that really stand out in terms of that sort of viewpoint that Planned Parenthood has literally stuffed down our throats. They say that young men and women are going to have intercourse no matter what, so we got to provide them with contraception. But they get forced into contraception for a little time, enough to start getting sexually active, then they discontinue it, and then they're pregnant. Well, then they are forced to get an abortion. But they don't like getting an abortion, so then they have what's called an atonement pregnancy, and within a year or two, they have an out-of-wedlock birth. So it's a whole, I mean, these things just happen. I mean, it's actually pretty logical that it would happen. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to view it or to see it. It just seems to be hard for people to accept it. We need to educate people along all of these lines so that they have a better idea. And one of the ways we can counter this, and then in a sense, we haven't done enough here of ourselves yet, but we've always felt that a natural family planning system can bring the couple closer together, as opposed to dividing them, because they're working on a common goal. They're working it out together. They're implementing it together in a very intimate part of their relationship. And that should really lower the divorce rates. And then you lower the divorce rates, it should lower all these other things as well. But we haven't really been able to prove that yet. I think to a large extent, because so much work has just gone on in the basics of natural family planning, and we haven't been able to get into ourselves, at least into some of these psychodynamic areas, but they will come. And there hasn't been any money to support the research either. So some of these are kind of complicated statistical studies that really do require a big effort. And if you don't have some funding, you'll never get it done. So these are all things that we need to do, because we need to be able to say, hey, look, this is an antidote to all of this. We believe it is, but we don't know it for an absolute fact. And so there's a lot of work we need to do to prove that to the public, and maybe to ourselves even to a certain extent, that we can believe in a natural family planning system even more.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment.
The consequences of sex selecting.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
According to a UNICEF report, every day in the country of India, about 7,000 fewer girls are born than expected, amounting to a total deficit of about 10 million baby girls. The most recent Indian census reveals that the ratio of girls to boys dropped further in the 1990s. This time period coincides with the introduction of sonogram technology into India, which allows parents to determine the sex of their baby before birth. Although a 1994 statute prohibits the use of technology for the purpose of sex-selective abortion, some are clearly disobeying the law.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
This is the Pope Paul VI Institute Minute with Dr. Tom Hilgers.
Is the Catholic Church out of date? Is she irrelevant in her views on reproductive medicine? Since the introduction of the birth control pill in the 1960s, medical science on a whole has made little attempt to understand the fertility and menstrual cycles. Physicians and researchers remain satisfied with controlling or masking symptoms and problems with the oral contraceptive pill. Couples wanting to live according to church teachings on love and life struggle to do so effectively and joyfully. Could contraception ever be morally permissible? I wondered about this when I was a senior medical student. That is, until the 25th of July, 1968, when Pope Paul VI issued the letter Humanae Vitae. Until next time, I'm Dr. Tom Hilgers.
For a complimentary gift and more information on the Pope Paul VI Institute, log on to www.popepaul6.com.
We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Many took it as, if not a delayed, but at least a very welcome sign from the U.S. bishops recently, who brought finally forward natural family planning as a vehicle to solve a lot of these problems, and that this should be a focus for church teaching.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, am I wrong, Dr. Hilgers, but that was not as strong a voice as it could have been.
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think it was quite as strong as it could have been. Also, it's extremely late in the process, but better late than never.
That's
I think.
Right.
I'm not an outward sort of antagonist to the bishops. There are some people in these various movements who get pretty angry at the bishops. And I'm not one of those people because they have a tough job and they really do come under a lot of attack, some of which is not legitimate. But at the same time, I do think they've got to see some of their responsibilities a little more clearly. And when it comes to this area, they need to see that these services are available in their diocese, in their area. And they need to support it, and they need to financially support it, and make sure that everybody knows that it's available and we can begin to grow these programs. So it's very important.
My hope is that it would be a part of every marriage preparation, because if it is something that can aid the family, support the family, and nurture that selflessness as opposed to the selfishness that comes from what contraceptive has fed not only our culture, but all the members of our church.
Yeah. No, in fact, you're right, although I would even say younger than that if we can, but I wouldn't at all discourage people in the pre-marriage programs to become involved in this. But we find that by that time, they've made up their minds on a lot of these things. Now, when you introduce it, though, sometimes maybe it's 2 or 3 years later, but sometimes they adopt it anyway, maybe not instantaneously, but if we could only get to children as they're growing up through grade school and high school with these concepts and the basic positive values and maybe the risks and the difficulties that presents with, they would begin to believe it a little bit more and maybe take on to it a little bit earlier. I mean, we're just skimming the surface with this stuff right now. I like to tell our affiliates in our Fertility Care Centers of America program, which has 190 fertility care centers around the country. It sounds like a lot, but we probably need anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 or more. I mean, they need to be every place. So we have a long way to go in making this available to everybody. It'll come, and Florence Nightingale, when she started, didn't know it was going to become a grand nursing profession either, so maybe we still have a shot at it.
Oh, I think that's our prayer. The one thing that I find incredible statistic-wise is that contraception, again, was supposed to be something that was freeing of women and that, as you had said, every child would be born wanted. How is it then that the abortion rate has just gone through the roof in this country since the advent of contraception? And not just because Roe v. Wade was legalized.
No, actually, I'm going to say something that maybe nobody's ever heard before, but you hear a lot when the abortion issue is discussed, that all we need is more contraception. You hear that from the Planned Parenthood people.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are pro-life oftentimes kind of react because they don't want to really promote contraception because there's a little division within the ranks about how they should approach that. But the bottom line to all of this is that there's not one piece of evidence, not one piece of evidence. And we're living in a evidence-based medicine environment today. There's not one piece of evidence that says that contraception has made an indentation in the abortion rate. All of the evidence, on the other hand, shows that contraception has nothing but increased the abortion rate. So for all of these people who are out there buying, literally buying the Planned Parenthood mantra of all we need is more contraception, contraception solves abortion. I mean, you even see pro-life legislators using this line. Mm-hmm. Well, we just need more contraception and we should promote that. Well, no, we shouldn't promote that because it actually makes it all worse. It just keeps fanning the flames of all of this. And I think Planned Parenthood knows this. Their whole machinery is getting money from the government, getting money from big-time foundations and contributors. They have a line that they're feeding everybody that somehow we're, as a culture, able to believe a lie sometimes better than we are able to believe the truth. And I think Planned Parenthood is a living lie, and it's a big problem with regard to how we approach it. And we just need to know that contraception has made no positive impact on the abortion rate except to increase it. And more contraception is not going to decrease it.
And as you also pointed out, the number of single-parent families because of unmarried parenthood, I mean, that's an extraordinary number as well.
Well, and it's, as we said earlier, it's increased sevenfold since the early 1960s. About one out of every three is born to a young woman usually, who's not married. A huge believer in the presence of the father in the family. You know, probably everybody out there would say, well, of course, if he's a man, he would think that. Well, it's true. I am a man. I do believe that.
Yep.
But at the same time, especially when it comes to raising sons. Now, I happen to have five children, four of which are young men now. But I know for a fact that as we were raising them, there were certain times when my wife would not have been able to handle them because they're bullheaded at times. They're strong. They're physical. They're all of those things. Can't say no, and they're going to timidly say, okay, Mom.
Right.
So I had to get in their face sometimes. Sit on them even, you know? I mean, there are little techniques we'd use.
I see my own husband doing that with our kids,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. But it works, and you got to do it lovingly. But they've got to know that there's a way to live your life, and there's a way not to live your life. Even with my busy schedule, I'm not home as much as probably a lot of fathers. But at the same time, they all know that I'm in family and that I have an impact on them as they're growing older and in their life. So I really believe that fathers have to be given a rein to be able to do that.
You can take a look at the increase in suicide and depression, not only because homes are broken or that there is no male role model in the family. Suicide and depression also comes about from, there are some alarming statistics now of young girls. Because they're on contraception, they start having sexual relations at a very young age. I've heard, Dr. Hilgers, that if a teenage girl comes into a physician's office and they're depressed, that they should begin to ask them about their sexual activity, because that can lead to that.
Actually, there's some very interesting studies done on just that issue, and it shows that the young women who are sexually active have a much higher rate of depression than those young women who are not sexually active.
Mm.
Now, again, Planned Parenthood makes it sound like this is part of liberation, part of growing up, part of, you know, becoming who you are, et cetera, et cetera. But mm-hmm. No, there's something in there that's not right. Otherwise, they wouldn't be depressed. If it were completely right and good and great and holy, why would they be depressed? There'd be nothing to be depressed about. You know, back in the old days when I studied psychiatry, they'd say that depression was sort of a repressed anger, internal, mm-hmm. and sometimes you can't always pinpoint where that anger is, but these young people have a real reason to be angry. They don't know where to put that anger, or maybe they're not even allowed to, but they get depressed, and that rate of depression is higher in those young women who are sexually active. That's not the picture that Planned Parenthood paints for us. And we've got to get to the bottom of this stuff. We've just got to expose this type of data. The other thing that we don't get to is that alcohol plays a big role in all of this as well.
Oh, yeah.
And so the more alcohol is in your life as a teenager, the more you're going to be sexually active. Now, I love the partnership Free America or something mm-hmm. that has the little eggs on the frying pan and this is your brains on drugs or something. You know.
That's right.
Well, they get into drugs, they get into alcohol, but they don't draw the connection to the sexuality aspects of it all. And they're all tied together. It's like you can't talk about this for some reason. I refer to it sort of as the sacred cow of the American culture. It's just been accepted that, first of all, we have no willpower. We have no degree to master our own emotions, our own inclinations. I mean, what Pope Paul VI called self-mastery mm-hmm. to most people is not possible. It's impossible. It's like we're a rabbit, and whatever we do, it's just impulsive. But we're not rabbits. We're actually human beings. We've got brains. We've got the ability to form our conscience, form our decision-making abilities, and so forth. Now, the fact that we don't do that is more a commentary on what our failings are than it is a commentary on who we are as individuals. And so if we don't teach our young people certain values, they're going to involve themselves in a lot of what's often called risky behavior in sort of epidemiological circles. And that's drugs, alcohol, sexuality, and all of this, which is not at all healthy.
That's what's so disturbing, is that we presume that they're going to do this. We don't do that with just about anything else. With smoking, we don't presume kids are going to smoke just because there are cigarettes out there. But yet when it comes to a sexual activity, the presumption's already made that they're going to engage in this behavior. And what message does that say to them about how we view them? Because we make this presumption, of course they're going to think, well, I should be doing this.
Sure. Well, the question about depression that we just talked about probably answers your question. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you mentioned the question of smoking. Well, nicotine is supposed to be at least one of the most addicting substances there is. So if you're a smoker, the ability to stop smoking is really difficult because of the addiction to the nicotine and to other, I guess, components of the cigarette smoke. But what's happened over the last 30 years because of very strong anti-smoking campaigns, the percentage of people who smoke in the United States at all ages has gone down precipitously. So why can you not take almost the same approach, if you will, to some of these sexuality-related issues? Why do these young women have to sacrifice their future fertility with a chlamydia infection, for example, or to human papillomavirus and perhaps cervical cancer? Or to gonorrhea, or to all of these things, which incidentally are all epidemic right now. And they're epidemic out of the words of those people who support Planned Parenthood. This is not just me speaking, but the very people who support Planned Parenthood have done the studies say that we're in the midst of an epidemic of sexually transmitted diseases. Now, why would we want to foister that onto young people? I don't get it.
Well, we have much more to talk about when we talk about disturbing trends in healthcare for women, children, and families, but we're just out of time for this segment. We're going to pick up in the next one because there's so much more, unfortunately, on that particular topic. Thank you so much, Dr. Thomas Hilgers of the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha, Nebraska. This is Chris McGregor. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.